So I'm going to start this evening with, this is one of my poems, just that it'll hopefully kind of frame where I'm going. Maybe not, but maybe. It's called A Small Crack. Before the flame ignites the world, sitting close to the breath, a voice hesitant and trembling a little. Is there a choice here, or is it just habit? Bamboozled by a world turning too fast. It's such a small movement how life's marvels leads to this moment's hesitation. How easily our wings could catch fire or help us soar above this hall. Oh yes, a small crack revealed, rising and floating in the midst of our own minds. Can't you tell the difference, sir, between being pulled into or being pushed away? Oh my, this slight stumble, caught again, entranced by this cycle of becoming. Weeds floating on the surface, knowing somehow the weeds keep reproducing themselves. This is about insight, courageously studying the laws of grasping. Courageously studying the laws of grasping, befriending the truth of dependent origination. Knowing someday I wish I didn't know or could know. Yet readiness for the quiet brings me down to my knees, a moment where I don't choose liking or disliking, but sit in the center of longing without movement. The sky slowly begins to open, recognizing that resting in that crack between the worlds brings the blessing of an adult mind and the heart of a child, held with ease. Freeing ourselves, this bright mind illuminates this impermanent world. So tonight, you know, one of the probably most fundamental teachings of the Buddha was the laws of dependent origination. And he said, without us being aware how it works, that we are caught on the cycle of suffering, of over and over again, repeating without waking up. And first of all, we have to understand how that works, you know, and this is really, the Buddha was interested in the fact that without understanding the whole kind of wheel, sometimes called codependent arising, if we begin to understand that, we see that there is choice. Otherwise, we are creatures that just keep repeating the same thing, wishing for different results over and over and over again. So it's pretty simple in the basic in how we look at this. So there are really three things in the wheel of dependent origination. There's the past, the present, and the future. You know, and again, in some ways, this is kind of simplistic the way the Buddha explained it, but I'll do my best to kind of unpack it in some levels. So the past, you know, first of all, on the wheel-dependent origination, there are kind of these 12 steps, but it's really based on this one fundamental. It's called ignorance, avidya. And ignorance is how this all happens. You know, I wish I could say it was wisdom, but unfortunately it's not. It is actually based on this. So we have to look at first of the past, the causations, because this is all about causes and conditions. And so understanding, first of all, that, you know, due to this ignorance, that there is what is called volitional formations. Sometimes we call that karma. Is that, you know, there is something from the past that has ignited this becoming. And how does that work? Well, first of all, there is, once that volitional formations, what you could call karma or just the past in its power and forces appears, then immediately then there is an igniting that happens, which is really about, consciousness. That consciousness then has a place to rest, but actually a place to simply recreate itself. And so that consciousness, traditionally they talk about it in the texts and stuff, as there's a wheel of life back there, is a monkey jumping from tree to tree. And I'll explain this later a little more succinctly, I hope. So then there is this consciousness that then, because consciousness exists, that it needs to take form. So to take form means that in our case, there's a mind and a body that appear. You know, and traditionally they talk about that that in the Tibetan pictures of it, it's a boat with somebody rowing and somebody steering. So mind and body. And of course, the mind is steering, and guess what the body's doing? You know, it's kind of rowing us along. And when mind and body kind of exists, then what also, in a sense, co-arises with that is the six senses. And, you know, in Buddhism, we talk about the five senses, and then the sixth one being the mind. But we actually treat these all pretty much, and I'll explain it, pretty much the same. Because they're all things that are moving and flowing, and consciousness itself will jump from seeing to smelling to hearing to thinking to planning, to, you know, the whole beeswax, you know? It just jumps, you know? And when we have kind of these six senses, it also means that there will be contact with the world, okay? And as soon as there's contact, then there is actually simple, you know, kind of Buddhist psychology is kind of simple in this. There's only three particular flavors. You know, it's either pleasant, which you kind of grasp onto. It's unpleasant, you want to push away. Or it's, they say, non-pleasant, not unpleasant, you know, which you could say neutral, but I don't think that's really appropriate. It's just... it has no charge on it, you know, whereas pleasant and unpleasant have charges. And now, suddenly, what happens when that contact is there? It actually is a minute moment. You know, it is really, that is the place that we can get off the wheel, or we simply, through habit, through our liking of pleasant or unpleasant, then there's a thing called clinging. You heard about this, you know? It's like, oh, I like that, or I don't like that, I'm gonna push it away. So there's clinging that happens, and out of the clinging comes a state called grasping, you know? And out of grasping comes a thing called becoming. And out of becoming comes birth, and out of birth, inevitable. Old age, if you're lucky, old age, sickness, and death. How's that? And then it starts again, you know? It's kind of always spinning. And so we are subject to, in a way, kind of that volitional formations are kind of the powers of the past that push themselves into the present. And our job specifically, and that's really the thing about the practice here, is that it is based on that there is only a fraction, a little crack in the world between, you could say, conditioning and habit and freedom. Okay? Conditioning and habit and freedom. And here, what this whole practice is about is somehow, first of all, you have to recognize this wheel of dependent origination and how habit and our sometimes our fear, our grasping, our clinging, they just keep us on this wheel going around and around, and we keep creating situations that we keep suffering in. You know, doesn't sound great, you know? And we're really good at this, you know? So the practice, okay, so we come to this practice, and you know, the idea is to sit down and shut up and turn the attention instead of, you know, our world is so based on external experience. You know, what are we always doing? What is part of that wheel of dependent origination is we're always chasing, you know. We're chasing a thought, we're chasing a sensation, we're chasing something, you know. Or we're resisting or moving away from or pushing away from. And so we're kind of in this constant little battle that's going on. And there's no peace there, you know. There is a simply repetition. And, excuse me, I may say ignorance, because we're not catching it, you know. And the practice is, so, okay, you're going to come and you're going to sit down, and you're going to first, the first beginnings of this practice is simply to study oneself, you know, and study how, you know, in a sense, how you operate. So it's really the study of the operating system, you know, which is based on our liking and disliking, okay? I mean, we're that kind of habitual, you know? And so here is this whole ideal, which is really an ideal, of that if we can stay in the moment and have learned how the system keeps, through attraction and repulsion, keeps creating our suffering, you know. And it's the practice is really simple. This is not about doing anything, you know. This is our willingness to kind of sit in the center of our world, you know, and see that there is this capacity to not react, to simply, because the reaction is again based on, you know, a lot of times history, family, culture, all of it. It's all based on that, you know? And we have to see that, oh no, we're choosing something different here. And the choosing that we're doing has to do pretty simple stuff that, you know, I'm sorry, we all have habitual reaction, you know? But what's really true about this is that this is a lot about the secondary reaction. The Buddha talked about it as the two arrows, you know. And I'm sorry, the first arrow simply comes along because you were born. You know, it comes with the territory. The Buddha said, I can't do anything about that. But the second arrow, which is actually has to do with the psychological part of our wanting and our fear and our attraction and our repulsion and our judgments towards things. That we have a power over. And that's really what you're doing here. You're trying to, in a sense, first see how the system works. And then, how can I choose? This really, it is wisdom and heart, you know. And so it may appear like, oh, it's really a non-reactivity, you know. Yes and no. You know, because you have to sit in the center of your experience and you have to choose not to react. You know, that's really what it, choose not to react. So, this is asking for a big thing, because think of all the years you've spent building up this incredible amount of, you know, funny creatures. Liking, disliking, we're so good at judging, you know, ourselves and others. And here is something that says, no, I'm not going to get on that train. You know, I'm actually going to get off. You know. And, you know, you would think that, well, getting off is something, but it's actually not anything. Now, this is where it gets a little, okay? Because it's not choosing for or against something. It's simply to stay in the center of your experience. That's really what we're trying to train ourselves over and over again, to stay, just simply stay, you know? And there may be an attraction towards something or a repulsion towards something. It's okay, you know. We don't have to open our mouth, you know, and we can really just kind of stay and learn to, you know, learn that, you know, it's simply that place in the center. It is one fraction of a moment in the center of that wheel of dependent origination, which you could say is just now or here, you know. And not moving, just saying, okay, I'm going to stay with this, you know. And unfortunately, you're going to have to do this a bazillion times, you know. It's like you're going to have to, again and again, choose not to, you know. And there is actually, if you keep choosing not to, and you've understood how you keep creating your own problem, and problem for others as well, if you keep kind of choosing not to, then there is an actual state here that we're dealing with, you know. And you could, one of the words is equanimity. It is a kind of a balanced place that's not moving towards something or moving away from it. It simply stays in the center, you know. So this place in the center of things, this little crack, and it is just, you know, the moment is just a moment. You know, before you, it's just gone. And then there's another moment, another moment. But we keep choosing that moment without any reactivity. Then, you know, if you stay with that, that's what this is all about. If you just have to stay with it, then there is I kind of in the poem call it crack in the world, you know. And it's actually a crack in the habitual, you know, and that there's a crack in that habitual, and suddenly there is another sense of things, you know. And that sense, it has to do with a simple statement. It's called peace. You ever heard of that? You know, just P-E-A-C-E. It's just peace, you know, and a sense of ease that comes that, in a sense, it's not so much about renouncing the world, it's not getting caught by the world. Right? There's a difference, you know, that we're not being caught by it. And then there is a sense, you know, we walk around in these, it's amazing, you know, we're so self-referential. We're always thinking about ourselves in relationship to everything else. You know that? Yeah. Yeah, that's what we do, you know? And here is saying, no, what I need to do is if I can keep referring back to this center point, you know, that there is this possibility of kind of recognizing a sense of peace and ease. You know, one of the descriptions I've used for years of this is the fact that, you know, it's just an image of my mind that I've held for a long time, is that there is this center point, and then there is, we can say, pleasant on the other side, and it's from 1 to 10. And what do we do? All of our energetics are based on trying to get that thing, up towards 10. Not possible, but anyway, that's what we do. And so we actually are in incredible reactivity to keep that thing up there. And the same way on the other side of this is 1 to 10 discomfort. You know, and what are we trying to do? We use our energetics to push that away. So we're constantly, in a sense, in a battle with life of trying to keep this pleasantness in trying to keep this unpleasantness away. And it is just this pendulum that's swinging back and forth, and it's always crossing the center point. And the practice is based on the center point, that somehow, and it, you could say the others are 1 to 10, either direction, plus or minus. And this is about zero, you know? And so first of all the reactivity you have, which is based on this wheel of dependent origination, is constantly in reaction, okay? So suddenly the question is that there is this kind of zero point. And this zero point, the Buddha kind of explained, it is unseeable, okay? So it's not something that's obvious. And he talked about this as, you know, he after his enlightenment, he wasn't sure whether he wanted to teach this stuff. Why? Because of the subtlety there in that center point, you know? And because it was not, you know, pleasant was obvious, unpleasant was obvious, you know? And so those things were somewhat workable, you know, except that they were caught on the wheel of becoming, this wheel of dependent origination. But as we start practicing, we start, you know, just in moments where we don't react, we start recognizing this zero point. Oh, when I don't, then there's another sense of my experience. You know, there is a habit and addiction to the pleasant and unpleasant. You know, unfortunately, it's just, that is the laws of dependent origination, you know. But here is this little crack in the world, this zero point, that as we begin to recognize and see, oh, you know what? I have a choice, you know. And maybe that's one of the biggest teachings here, is I have a choice whether to go into reaction in my wanting or whatever, or to simply sit there, and you're going to feel through it. I'm sorry, you know, it's just that sometimes there's these situations that, you know, catch us, and sometimes it's the body, sometimes it's the heart, sometimes it's just the psychology. And what happens is we react. And here we're saying, okay, you know, that first arrow we can't do much about, but the second arrow we do have a choice. And that's what this is about. We can say, okay, you know what, and this has to be a conscious choice, is I'm not going there. You know? And we're so good at, you know, you are such good storytellers. You know? And it's all self-referential. It's like mine. You know? And, you know, all that I, me, mine, it actually distorts. And you are passing, you're still in the battle between liking and disliking. You know, and here is the center point. It's so, in that way, it is subtle. And that was the Buddha said, yes, this is these are subtle teachings in that way. And so not for everybody, you know, because so much of the world is just dependent on that, on the reactions of the pleasant and unpleasant, you know. And also, if you're a good storyteller, then you can have a lot of judgments and opinions and views about everything. You notice? You know? And here, they're saying, no, I'm not going there. I'm kind of going, and I'm going to try to sit in the center of things. You know? If you can teach yourself to, in a sense, to not react so much and to kind of stay in that center point, then there's this, what is true is that there is, you know, it is simply a deep sense of enoughness. You know, I don't need more. I actually have enough. And the situation I'm in is enough. You know, isn't that great to know? You know? And that, so then there's a sense of relaxing and a sense of ease that comes with this non-choosing, you know. And it is actually, I can say non-choosing, but it's also choosing to not react so much, you know. So much of your storytelling is based on yourself. You know, you listen to your dialogue sometime, your monologue, I should say. You know, but it's probably a little bit of dialogue, actually, with yourself. You know? And, you know, some of it is out of wanting, out of fear, out of, you know, old conditioning. You know. But here is this place where you're not choosing, you know, in the sense of the pleasant or unpleasant or the storytelling or about I or me or mine, you know. You're actually just looking at the zero point, you know. And what's interesting about that zero point, it's actually, all of these practices are somatic. It means that when you kind of choose that zero point, it's actually a body feeling. Oh, I'm here. You know, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just keep on staying here. And as I stay here and keep choosing here, then there is a sense of deep relaxation. You know, it's like, you know. And so what are we relaxing? You know, it is actually kind of our dualism of myself and other, you know. And we're always walking around kind of creating that on some level. And this is saying, no, I'm not going to, I kind of abandoned the dualism and began to sit in the center of this zero point and not choose, you know. And what we're talking about here is actually, in a sense, Buddha's enlightenment. You know, he saw the consequences. That's the wheel of dependent origination, was the consequences of how we liked and disliked and how we identified. And this is not about doing that. This is something else, you know. And suddenly, if we can do this in a way that, you know, you'll have to practice this for quite a while. Unfortunately, it's not, you know, your habit is to stay with your defensive system of liking, disliking, you know. So this is actually a radical change, you know. This is a radical self-acceptance that happens, you know. And with that, then this kind of center point, then there is a sense, a deep, you know, in some ways it's taking the charge off of the dualism or taking the charge off of who you think you are, you know. Because the suffering actually comes from who you think you are, you know. And this is saying, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to not choose that. And if I not choose it, then there is this incredible possibility, you know. And the Buddha was pointing directly at this, you know. And he said, oh, if we don't choose and we stay, we get off the wheel of dependent origination, you know. There is, you know, incredible experiences. First is just the experience of clear insight. And then there's really a sense of faith. And from that, one begins this process of, you could call it untangling, you know. But what are you untangling, you know? You're untangling that dualism. It's like it doesn't matter anymore. What matters is that if I can stay here, then that self, you know, it's really a self-possession, because it's like a self-possessiveness. Suddenly, it's not so important. And the self-referential is somewhat dissolved. And then something remarkable happens, you know. Suddenly we're no longer in the dualism of self-reference, but we're actually in the world, if that makes any sense to you. You're no longer caught in that self-referential, but you're actually sitting in the center of the world. And one of the clear understandings is that First of all, that first arrow, which we're all subject to, of, you know, if there's birth, if you're lucky, you will live for a while. You'll, you know, get old, get sick, and die. Isn't that lovely? You know? And for some reason, we don't believe that. But that's okay, you know. But that self-referential, suddenly it begins to thin itself out. But it understands, one of its most basic truths is it understands that if I'm not so self-involved, then I can begin to see the world. And what do I see in the world? You know, one of the things Ajahn Chah said that was, to me, really interesting, he was asked about doing the loving-kindness practice. He says, oh, don't worry about it. Just do insight practice. You know? And why? Because if you actually started seeing how the operating system in ourselves and others work, it would break your heart. And you'd go, oh, my God. You know, everybody's going through the same, excuse me, no, I guess I'm not supposed to say it. But anyway, you know what, you know? It's like, oh, my God, you know? And then suddenly there is this thing of humanity, you know? It's not no longer separateness of sex or race or color, you know, which are all kind of identifiable and sufferings that are there. But it's more than that, you know. It's really then has to do with, you know, if you're a human being and you understand that all conditions, all creatures are conditioned to the same laws, then there's a natural sense of empathy and compassion that exists from that practice of that zero point of just sitting in the center of things where we're not so self-referential, you know? And suddenly it's no longer me. It's, in that way, I guess you could, hey, that's wrong to say us, but it's really non-separateness, you know. Because the illusion here, the delusion is separateness. You know, we come here to kind of try to break a little of that down, you know, so that some way we're not separate. Because the separateness, you all understand the separateness, and you all know how much complexity and suffering that you have been through in that separateness, you know. So you got it? You know? I mean, really, you know, it's like we spend so much, you know, energy trying to figure it out. And what's lovely about this is not figuring it out. It's actually not at all. It's simply letting go of it, you know. So I think, is it okay if I do some questions? Is that okay? I mean, maybe about whatever it is. We'll start, please.
So how do we avoid just cycling, or let me say trading one volitional formation for another? So I'm sitting there, I'm present, you know, aversion arises to boredom or some discomfort
right.
in my leg, but I notice that, and so I don't take this habitual action, but it's not as though another volitional formation just arises in the next moment, saying, do this instead of do that. Like, at some point, you have to act, and how do you know that it's not just...
Well, I think this is a piece around, from my thing, it's not in your head. This is, you know, a lot of this is, you know, from a Buddhist point of view, where is my mind? It's at my heart. And so there's this checking in that you can do that a lot of times will naturally, the other is your head, you know, where it just keeps creating volitional formations. And but we go to our heart and we go, oh no, you know, I'm not going to choose. I'm just going to sit here, you know. And the heart can do that. The mind is just ruthless, you know. It'll keep, you know, mental proliferation. It just keeps creating itself, you know. So is that, yes, you know, it's very much, you know, I think ultimately this is all about the heart, because that's, you know, the mind-heart is not separate in kind of Buddhist thought. So please.
Thank you for filling me with life.
Pushing and the pulling. The center, finding that center, and then the power. I have the power to not be involved in the pushing and the pulling. I have the power to meet the center and to say, this is the center and this is where I want to be. And this is the power, and this is what I want. This is what I want. I want that power to be able to say, not to say yes or not to say no, but just to say.
You know, there's this wonderful Buddhist term. It's called letting go. You know? And kind of trite, overly used, but that it's not really, and the thing is, it's not a power, it's a choice. So we're choosing to let go, which brings us back to that center point, you know. And I have to say, I'm going to just say this, because letting go has been so, it's been so overused and trite in some ways. And here's the little tricky part of that word. That word letting go, a lot of times will have desire in it. You know, oh, I want to let go. You know, I want to let go. And really, probably the more realistic term here is to let it be. Okay? So just let it be. And so I'm being pulled this way, and I just let it be. I come back to center. I'm being pulled this way. I just let it be. I come back to center. And eventually a process will happen. And the process is not, you cannot do this. Okay? And that process is letting go. It is, you as a being can let things be. But a process that happens is actually the letting go. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I've reached a place where there's resistance and there's non-resistance. And my body feels. I can't stop my body from not feeling, just like I can't stop my mind from not thinking. And so there is a resistance and there is a non-resistance. And how do I get in between there to find the center? Maybe that's where the power is.
But I wouldn't use that word, you know, because
resistance,
I think it's somehow it may distort somehow, because it's really...
Power?
Yeah, I would use heart.
Yeah.
Well, you know, heart is a better word.
Well, I agree with you. I don't find myself being in a power position, even if I reach a place where I can say that I'm consciously where I'm awake and I'm focused. And that's not power. That's really, it's a non-power.
But again, you know, that's why I use the word heart. You know, because that's really what it boils down to is, you know, when your heart is in a state of acceptance and it's neither holding to the pleasant or the unpleasant, then there is a natural natural letting be and letting go that happens there. Okay?
And there's the non-resistance. You know, you have resistance, you have non-resistance. And how do you get off of that where you're not struggling between the two? And acceptance is a good word that I've used. And so my body feels a certain way, I accept it. And as soon as I accept it, that pain or that discomfort, it's no longer holding me. And
hallelujah.
And then
let's pass this on to who's okay.
Is this on? Okay. Paul Simon.
When we say your name, and then we'll kind of try to keep this.
I'm Vic.
More.
Victor. Vic.
Yeah.
Paul Simon wrote and sung a song called "Slip Sliding Away."
Yep.
And in that song, I think he had incredible insight, because what he said is the closer you get to your destination, the more you slip and sliding away. And we just have to keep at it.
Yeah. And the truth is, the closer, and I'll do this, the closer you get to 0 point, you know, and the kind of the less you're there, slippier it is. You know, it's so easy to push or grab, cling or grasp, you know. So, it's good words. And then we'll get to our,
Hi, I'm Mike.
Hi, Mike.
So, you get to the 0 point, or the center.
Mm-hmm.
And you see things in the world. And there are some things I cannot abide. Am I supposed to ignore that?
You know, I was saying it's about the heart. The heart, you know, again, if there's a sense of non-separateness, I trust the heart will act. You know, this is not just a passive thing that you, you know, oh, I'm just in the 0 point, I'm not going to, you know. No, we act, you know. And I think that's one of the, now I'll use the word power, that as a human being, you know, we can act, you know. And if it comes from heart, I think you're okay. If it comes from judgment, fear, and particularly fear, then I have a question about it. Do you follow what I'm saying? Because, you know, we just have to be really kind of careful with how we participate in non-judgment. So, Terrell, I think, let's see if we can get that microphone. Oh, there's another one. See, you can do two at once. No.
My name is Terrell. I actually came with a question on a piece of paper before I came here from one of my Dharma buddies, and who better to ask than you, John? She wants to know, what's the difference between hope as a defilement, for example, wanting things to be otherwise, and having faith and aspiration in the Dharma? She wanted me to answer, weigh in on that, and I said, well, I got to go listen to John first.
Well, first of all, as a term, hope, you know, it's such a tricky thing, because hope, one of the things, has desire for a future in it, you know. Faith in the Dharma has to do with that 0 point about right here, you know. Oh, I'm putting more of a attention here, and then I'll take it one step farther, because what is faith is, you know, a sense of trust, and that somehow, for me, these teachings are enough. You know, I don't have to add anything or anybody out there. I can actually own it myself. You know, and so that's really the trust and faith in the Dharma as it is. You know, so please.
Well, for me, there were lots of golden nuggets in what was brought today. And this, these images of dependent origination and the wheel and so the idea of that it's all somatic.
It's also
really
what? Somatic.
All somatic.
Yes.
Really stood out for me.
Yes.
That the body informs us so
Correct.
Largely and that we can trust it and that it's really our friend because so often, you know, there's so much self-loathing.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of the culture has sort of brought about. Or,
yeah.
And that then also the idea that we're in the center of the world, like, wow, that's big for me, but I love it, you know, because it's true. And when you were finished with the talk, I thought, oh, it's time to go home. You know, it's all been, for me, it seems so simple, and that's really
good. It is
good.
Simple. This is the actual truth of it, is this is not complicated.
Yeah.
Not easy.
Yeah.
This is not easy. But it is not that complicated,
yeah.
You know? And really, and I can't say enough about that this is simply a somatic experience. It means that, you know, to become enlightened does not happen out there. It is actually a physical thing, you know? So just to have the confidence that it actually doesn't happen out there. It happens as part of this moment-to-moment experience.
Mm.
And that we begin to trust the moment to moment, the real somatic truth of that, because this is really simple, you know?
Yeah.
Is you can never put your mind in your body. First of all, it's never the same body. You got that? It's never the same body. And that, to put the mind in the body, it means you're kind of present here. You're always in. You cannot put your mind and your body in the past. You cannot put it in the future. You can only put it in the present. So, it's an incredible support for this practice of awakening. You know, oh, I'll train myself to stay here more. Oh, good, it's part of my body. And you know, we have so much about image. I mean, this is kind of our cultural thing. You know, image and age and beauty and ay ay ay, you know? You know. And this is saying, no, I'm turning around and really I'm learning to love myself. Not for what I look like or what age I am or anything, of just the fact that I am the somatic creature that when I kind of get out of my own way, that I see, I actually see, you know. How's that?
Hi, thank you, John. would you mind speaking a bit about how, my name's David, by the way.
Okay.
Would you mind speaking a bit about how the practice of meditation informs equanimity for you?
Yeah. Well, like all creatures, I have ups and downs. And I go back to what I was just saying, that there is that ability. I've trained for so many years to keep my mind in my body. You know, I actually don't leave it too much. I still get rolled around, you know? Hey, you know? I'm not, you know, I think sometimes, oh, maybe if I was just stayed a monk and not entered the world, but you know, then I wouldn't be teaching the same. You know, I have to get kicked around too. You know, and because then we can all, in a sense, we're all in this together. There's not a separateness. You know, and I love, you know, living in Thailand almost half the year. The monastic system there, it's really, it's so beautiful in the sense it separates out from the rest. You know. And becomes this very kind of lofty, high ideal for a very relational culture, you know, and all of it, all that goes with that, you know. So I find that these teachings of just keeping my attention in my body and not believing everything I think, You know? It's so amazing that, you know, we can make up so much stuff about things and cause us so much suffering. And sometimes it ain't true. You know? It's just how we were holding the circumstances, you know? So is that helpful? Yeah. You know, I always say, just stay out of trouble, you'll be okay. You know. So I want to talk a little bit about metta here, because it's like, you know, when we kind of sit in the center of things and we stop causing ourselves extra suffering, I say extra suffering, then there's this possibility that separateness. It's such a weird, because we're a very separate and lonely culture, you know. And when you look at it from the point of view of kind of non-separateness, then it's different. It's like, oh, you know, if I have actually learned to love myself, you know, and this is, you know, we're a culture who are so judgmental, you know, that actually what I'm saying is kind of countercultural, you know. So it's no longer about image or my education or anything. It's about that I'm a human being, and that I can care for myself, you know? And that if I can care for myself, then I actually love myself. I mean, that's radical, you know? With all that, you know, comparison going on. And this is saying, no, I'm not comparing. I'm just owning this, you know, each of you, you all have good hearts. You all have good hearts. And you wouldn't be here. But even if you weren't here, you're somewhere else, you would still have that, you know, underneath all the pain or suffering or reactivity would be this good heart. And so here we actually begin to honor it and own it and see that it in its way, I'll use this word now, power, it has a power, you know, and that power it has a capacity to extend it out to a world in need of us. You got that? I mean, what a mess. You know, holy smoke, what a mess, you know? And here we try to take responsibility, you know. But it's not about taking responsibility for the others or the culture or the politics or any of that. It's really taking responsibility for ourselves, you know, and that we have this capacity and we each have different talents, you know. And if we do this, then our talents will be used, you know. You don't have to, you know, make up anything about it. You will be called or pulled on. But you've got to clean out, you know, get over yourself, you know, and begin to support the very basic goodness that you are, you know. So I'm going to have you we're going to do a couple minutes of metta here, you know. So first, just kind of breathing into your heart, bringing your attention. It really is kind of, I always think of it as the center of myself, is this area of heart. And, you know, there's kind of the physical heart, but there's this heart center. It's kind of that can be felt and known. And then a lot of times it's as simple as, you know, we have kind of the classic phrases of, you know, may I be safe. May I be peaceful. May I be healthy. May I be at ease. These are kind of the classical phrases. But I hope in your own practice that you find what is it that supports this good heart of yours. And I have kind of my phrases that I've kind of made up, which are not so much out of, you know, 13th century Buddhaghosa, but actually just out of the here and now. It goes, may I live with an open heart. May whatever covers my heart, may whatever covers my heart, may it be dissolved. May I live with an open heart. May whatever covers my heart be dissolved. Now, one, we have this power of kind of honoring our humanity and ourselves and our being. But we also have the power, due to this mind heart, to extend it out in front of you, behind you, to each side of you. And this is really the wish that goes out in all directions. It's kind of like a stone falling in the center of a forest pool. It ripples out from this center we call ourselves out to others. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be free from any inner or outer harm. May you have ease of being. And again, we extend this to the community here, to the Sangha, and all our connections out there, family and friends, people we work with, that they too may benefit from our time here. And again, whatever, you know, there's a kind of a gathering here that, you know, whatever merit or power or energy is created through this coming together, that we extend it out to beings everywhere, to the all the creatures, to the earth, the sun, the moon, the waters, that our life and others may be supported, and that we may support this harmony of earth and the elements of water and air and fire. So ultimately, we can all live in peace. May all beings everywhere be happy. Stay out of trouble. You know? And I was really glad to, you know, I'm kind of off the circuit these days, you know, having been a circuit preacher for years and years. And now I'm just, I finally just a bum. You know? Yes. So, take care of yourselves, take care of the Sangha. You know, it's really precious. This is a wonderful place. You have a wonderful community, and it needs your support. You know, whether it's bookkeeping or, you know, being a registrar or coming to, you know, there's so many levels for people to come together. And you may have wonderful talents that you could offer. And I know it would be appreciated. So, please, take care.